Checking in again with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our first Tacky Talk of July. Tacky, how are you?
Hey, happy July, everyone, and the continuation of a hot and humid summer. Last year, we couldn't get enough rain, and this year, we got a little too much.
I know. It was a soggy one for sure, but I know you were out and about at all the local festivities.
Yeah, I made my way to House Neck on Edgewater Drive for their family fun day. Great attendance, hundreds, you know, coming and going. This is not an event you stick around for the whole 3 hours, but you bring kids in, wear them out, and then you head on home and get ready for July 3rd evening as well as the 4th itself. And made a way to my normal pattern of Adam Shore at 9 a.m. and the run around the circle with the kids and the bike ride, and congratulations to all the scholarship winners. And Germantown is right afterwards with the short parade in Gull Point area through a, you know, 3-block-ish neighborhood. Big attendance in Germantown, a lot of folks, a lot of new families, a lot of new kids. It's great to see everyone. I'm not sure everybody knows who I am, but generally the guy wearing the tie is kind of out of place these days. And just enjoyed, you know, talking to folks and watching the kids have a great time. I mean, this is a big part of July 4th. And Marymount Parade, you know, did kick off, rain or shine, it was going to kick off. And I had a chance to meet the new police chief, Chief Kennedy. We had a quick and nice conversation and reminded the chief, his father was always very good to me through my life, not just in politics, but also, you know, great conversation and understanding how things work around me. So, you know, we did that and thankfully did not get rained on at the Marymount Parade. Got a little drizzly, but no actual rain like it did at Adam Shore in Germantown. And, you know, the Tacky Chan ice pop threw against a big hit at the end of the parade. Tradition continues until I can't do it anymore. So yeah, it was a good day, but the air was a little thick. It was a little muggy. I didn't expect the air quality to actually affect me as much as this. I do have a very, 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 very mild case of asthma from environmental impacts, but I was a little surprised that even I was having just a mild case of breathing issues this past weekend.
I didn't know that Germantown actually had a 4th of July parade. That was kind of news to me, and I've worked in the city a very long time. Is that something new?
No, it's been going on for a very, very long time. You know, the neighbors there put it together, P.J. Foley. You know, many folks know PJ through his environmental work, you know, and his brother and the folks that live in that neighborhood have always put together this, you know, really modest event. You know, all the kids in the neighborhood would come down to families, hot dogs and burgers and drinks and all that stuff. And they do things like sack races and egg tosses. Egg tosses is always fun to watch still because they're not boiled.
You crack a few eggs, I'm sure.
Yeah, I see a few of them, and where they get cracked is also sometimes kind of funny. It's a little neighborhood that's close-knit, and it's also a good chance for neighbors to see neighbors. And then they have, you know, that little Gull Point Yacht Club area, which, you know, does have direct access to the water. So the reason a lot of folks don't realize, I think partially is because of Swanna Parade. Swanna Parade is actually also at 10 a.m. And I don't go to the Swan Parade. I don't represent that part of the city. It's like if Bruce Ayers came down to Germantown, right? You know, or Marymount Parade. He doesn't represent that part of the city. So for those statewide folks, citywide folks, maybe even statewide, sometimes we've had statewide candidates and as well as the Congressman Lynch come by to these parades. And you're dashing from Adam Shore all the way to Squanum. March that parade, and you have, you know, you're not going to make it really back in Germantown. We could do like a pass through Germantown just to add to some families as you circle back to Marymount. And if you're guys like John Keenan and Michael Morrissey and others, you've already had other parades happen over the weekend as well. I believe Randolph is actually July 3rd. So, you know, if you're a senator or a county official, or in case of Bruce Ayers, who represents part of Randolph, you know, you're going to find yourself much more busy on weekend because you also have these additional events in July 4th prior. So I will tell you all, I'm very thankful to being a Quincy City rep and very thankful to have the district configuration that I have. And for 13, well, actually, minus COVID, right? And, you know, essentially 11 years now, 11 of these, I've gone to every single one of these events, minus the COVID years.
Yeah, you definitely spread yourself thin. The more events you have to attend, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've experienced every type of weather July 4th now. I mean, blazing hot sun, nice tranquil breezy ones. I've done a tropical storm force march, it felt like, in Marymount, where these did not we just went. The wind was blowing sideways. It was me and Anne Mahoney trapped under an umbrella, just booking it towards the end. I was like, you're just gonna book it. So we've done a little bit, and of course, this is a rain ain't new, as you can tell, but this is probably the most hazy one I've done.
Yeah. Well, summer got off to a slow start, but it's definitely making up for lost time.
Most definitely so. And I've always had a tradition, once I'm done July 4th events, I have to clean out the cooler of the ice pop system failure once, so to speak. And then wash up, head up for some food if we can find a place open, and then head to the movie theater. I've always traditionally tried to watch a July 4th movie as part of my personal July 4th.
Oh, interesting.
So I intentionally do not do anything in the evening because between the family fun days before, we were not closed at the State House on July 3rd. I was actually working with staff on July 3rd. There was like day job type work stuff. After doing the house neck day, so I had to do all that, and then like I said, July 4th, I do set aside time for myself after the daytime if it's done just for me. So I skip it in at Bay Point fireworks, which I hear are wonderful, but at that point I'm kind of tired. I'm like, I like to sit in a cool theater. And this year was Indiana Jones and was it the Dial of Destiny?
Okay.
I'm gonna watch this year.
It's interesting. I was gonna ask you, coming from an immigrant family, Tacky, what 4th of July means to you?
It's my childhood and 4th of July actually ended up often at Grandpa Wong's house. He was not my actual grandpa. He was a very senior man who actually came here, interestingly, from Shanghai to the States. Quick side story. He came here from the States. He wasn't allowed to work any job that gave him Social Security. He ended up doing a lot of empty table stuff. He is a trained professional chef from Shanghai, and he came at a time when the Chinese Exclusion Act was kind of ending. He couldn't vote because the naturalized Chinese were not allowed to vote by law. And he came during a time period where he was not allowed to move out of Chinatown. It was redlining. Interesting. He talked to him was very, obviously he's passed. He died at 101.
Wow.
And he wanted to die at home. He wanted to go home to Shanghai and die, which is what he did. So he lived here pretty much, well past half his life, and didn't have a lot of anything. He managed to scrape enough money for three family in the South End. People forget the South End was actually part of Chinatown before the Turnpike. He was here before the Turnpike. And before Nemec really just like, the medical center, now Tufts Medical Center, just absolutely took over the place. So he would tell us stories about he couldn't get a job, he couldn't get Social Security, no one gave him a regular paycheck. He couldn't work outside of the geographic zone because no one would hire a Chinese chef that could do other things. He didn't cook just Chinese food. And he would go to old A&P, he would buy, half rotted 12-year-old 12-day-old meat or whatever, and bring it home and cut it up and create some incredible meal with it. And he introduced us to Bake Alaska as a child. She always made for us a strawberry Brigham's ice cream as part of it. And so July 4th, my dad would take us out there. And this is the South End in the 80s. You guys who are in that generational bracket know it being in the South in the 80s was very different than it is today. Bars and the windows and all that. Only place I ever seen bars and windows as a child. And we used to have a meal there. I was at the kiddie table. I think you guys know what I'm talking about. And there'll be a big party at his place. And we watched the Pops from his house. And this was very often when my father was alive. This was quite a common event, July 4th. When he actually ran the restaurant, we had a restaurant. He had a restaurant in Central Square. That part of my childhood included the July 4th component of being at the restaurant. And then when my father passed, it was much less festivities. Grandpa Wong started getting much older. It was hard for him to run big events at his house. And we had much more subdued. July 4th from there on in. My father was much more sociable in terms of trying to get to other people's parties and whatnot. So
right. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of that kind of evolution of my life with the work of my father. So, like, you know, Thanksgiving was really big for him. He would have like 30 people in the house, right? New Year, Chinese New Year, we end up driving like a whole day, no joke, of him doing Chinese New Year respects to a whole lot of folks, from folks that gave him his first job here to a lot of the senior members of our community who weren't blood by family, but blood by friends. Friends, family by friends, but not by blood.
Sounds like it was very important to your grandfather.
To my father. I lost my father's father died when my father was very young, about in his mid-teens, back in Macau after they fled out of China. And then my mother's father actually had minimal contact with in Hong Kong. He never left the island.
Yes,
the only time we ever saw them was whenever we actually went to Hong Kong to see him. So we adopted, like I said, kind of by adoption, Grandpa Wong adopted everybody as like the grandkid / great grandchild. Family. It's not uncommon. And unlike other immigrant groups, you know, our family didn't come in mass, meaning we didn't bring like 25 families with us, so to speak. You didn't have this big, massive enclave of in-laws and everyone else. It was really a scattered for win situation.
Yep. Interesting. So, but you yourself, obviously fully Americanized. So, yeah.
No, I kind of grew up here. I mean, I tell people I have all the Quincy quirks as well as the things that, you know, come with just growing up here. So it's hard to say Americanized when you actually grew up here, because you were never actually something else.
Right.
So that's kind of the peculiar things. And, you know, again, you still put up with some folks telling you, you're welcome to our community. I'm like, I kind of grew up here. I was born.
Probably been there a lot longer than they have. Yeah.
I know more about this place than you, most likely.
Right.
And of course, if you lived here, you know, for decades, you no longer need to be welcomed. I mean, you're kind of part of the community already.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable, because why do you welcome people that have lived here forever?
No, right, exactly. You welcome newcomers, right?
Yeah, yeah. Being the other newcomers coming through, whether they're immigrants or new residents to the city in some form, doesn't matter how you got here. I mean, you're going to be new and welcome new folks. But, you know, if you've been here a long time, you eventually become the welcomer, not the welcomee. But the Asian experience is unique, because it's the only one where people refer to folks that look like us as a constant outsider, right? As we pointed out earlier, Americanization. Well, you can't be American as if you actually was born here, right? It doesn't work that way. And also the concept that, where is quote unquote home, right? And I do talk to people who are immigrants, ask them, in terms of home, doesn't mean where you should go home to. It's where you actually grew up, right? Where is the places, or like you talk to other folks that, have been in multiple places through their childhood, right? Military families in particular, right? But which place they lived in, they have the most affection with. Now, even though you're never going to return there, I mean, it's a big part of your childhood, right? I never shy about the fact of a Quincy kid, even at the State House with my colleagues, and I'm very proud to be a Quincy kid. Good and bad, right? I never say everything's perfect. I never said that once, but it's kind of part of the deal. And, it's an interesting issue, among Asian Americans in particular, because people inherently treat you like a foreigner no matter what. It's actually like part of American culture. It's not always an individual bias. It's just built into the system. It's just so, it's just not, you're just not conscious of it.
Interesting.
Like I said, it's like being a Quincy kid. I have all the hangups like everybody else, and prejudices and thoughts and biases as well as everybody else, but also have a lot of pride and understanding and affection, and I'm still learning it, because the city is changing, the population is changing, and I'm still learning it. And you've heard me gripe here more than once about how things used to be, but what used to be doesn't help you move forward.
Speaking of your work at the State House, what's going on at the State House these days?
This is a fairly quiet week, but this morning I did virtually testify at the public joint committee of public health regarding legislation to have the Department of Public Health issue certified nursing assistant exams in Spanish and Chinese, and hopefully maybe some other languages. So some of you may not be aware or may be aware that the South Cove Manor in Washington Street is the largest and single Asian assisted living facilities and rehab center. It's both predominantly like 95% Chinese in particular. Not surprising, you have an immigrant population, and particularly Chinese, constantly aging because they've been here actually up to four generations now of Chinese in Boston in particular. And of course, now you have like the mother's generation who's an immigrant, and they're also aging out as well. But for whatever reason, the American Red Cross stopped issuing this CNA exam in more than one language. And we've been unable to convince under the Baker administration, DPH, to do it by regulation. So we filed a bill. And last session, we were able to put it into the economic development bill. And the governor amended, vetoed my bill, as I complained, elaborated about my governor and Baker my bills, by tacking on a lot of other language that's completely irrelevant to the issue. We decided to create all new public policy, piggybacking my issue on just one topic matter concerning multiple lingual exams for CNAs. And obviously there was a lot of frustration out of me in July of last year about this being utilized in this manner to push forward an agenda that is not mine and, you know, put me in a bad spot. So regretfully, you know, session ended, we were unable to get past the governor's admitted veto. And now we find ourselves, you know, filing a bill and starting the process. Also, it's kind of quirky. I've not virtually testified in a hybrid format. So this is my first experience being on this side of the screen, so to speak, as opposed to being the, you know, chair. When I chair a committee, I'm on the other side with the gavel or sitting next to the Senate co-chair, helping to coordinate the hearing with staff when I'm actually not chairing the gavel. I'm actually doing something else when I'm up there besides just listening to testimony and just trying to be supportive. And so this was actually a different experience. I using Microsoft Teams and testifying this way, you know, I got to see the whole countdown display this time, and it gave me a bit more understanding what it's like for a testifier and this side of the screen. So I don't often testify to bills, partially because I can get a hold of a chair fairly easily, especially during formal sessions or when there's other public hearings, the building is more active. Secondly, you know, generally it's a request by someone to ask me to do this. In this case, South Cove Manor asked me to testify to this bill. But obviously I'll have conversations behind the scenes as well, you know, about why this is important to the community. So that was how my day started. Roll right into testimony first thing.
Well, so, I mean, you know, normally you're used to in-person interaction, right?
Yeah, it's a little different. I'm kind of happy I did it this way because, yeah, it gave me a little bit of experience being on the other side of the camera, so to speak, right? Besides the convenience issue. You know, it's, you know, as a chair, it doesn't hurt to be on the other side of the camera.
Yeah, yeah, it gives you a different perspective. So you're still learning things even after all these years, Tacky.
Yeah, this old dog still has to learn a new trick every so often, right?
So are we still, is the state still running on an interim budget?
That is correct. We've been on call this week by the speaker's office. The schedule came out last Friday to put us on call. So we're kind of waiting out. It's actually not scheduled for today. Actually, I've not checked in. Informal session is actually, I'm looking at the clock, it's 11:34. Informal session most likely have already ended, and I've not had a chance to, because I've been talking to you for the last 30 minutes on and off camera, so I've not checked in regarding how informal session went. But I'm sure there'll be an email regarding next week's schedule soon, most likely putting us also on call, which means that our schedule will shuffle once the speakers and Senate President sets the center for the budget. So yeah, how it works is that when we're not on time by June 30th, if we run an interim budget. Interim budget is generally appropriation for 2 weeks or 4 weeks, depending on where we are in negotiations. And it will utilize last fiscal year's numbers carried into this year. So the spending would be the equivalent of last fiscal year's budget. Now, what would happen is that when the new budget is approved, it is not re we're not repaying again. The month's already gone by in July, so it's not like you're paying twice. We just deduct out of the main budget what, you know, that few weeks that were in the interim budget. Does that make sense?
Figures, because it's based on the previous year's budget.
That's correct. And since we're running a surplus still, I know that was a lot of doom and gloom 2 months back. You know, we do have a surplus that is allowing us to be able to do this. And eventually it's fancy accounting, for lack of a better term, where we're just refunding the money back to the general fund through the new budget. It's a whole mechanism because you have to account for last fiscal and this year fiscal's money, and you can't commingle. So you have to do an accounting mechanism to make sure the transfers are done correctly back to the general fund. So the comptroller and later on in the fall, the auditor, you know, can follow where all that money went. To ensure that the fiscal year dollars are appropriately accounted for in the right fiscal year.
Yeah.
So it's time, not a big panic about this because we are okay on enough surplus to get us through this, and the county medical mechanism would reconcile it. If this was a fiscal crisis year, which was in 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 of my time here, we had the Great Recession lingering effects on tax revenues, where revenues were either not growing, stagnated, or actually shrank in some form. Getting the budget on time became very, very crucial because there's no way we're going to be able to spend the next cycle. And sometimes certain line items will actually be reduced as other parts of the budget. So for example, when Medicare, Medicaid grows, it squeezes something else on the other side.
Yeah.
And when we have revenue growth, the squeeze would be harder on the other side because there's no way we're not going to pay for Medicare.
Right. You can't, I mean, literally, you can't get blood from a stone, as the saying goes, right? If the money's not there, you have to cut it from somewhere.
That's correct. And certain things are uncuttable because of nature of service. And also there's federal reimbursements and federal mandates. And then, you know, there's obviously state law mandates, but, you know, we've always been able to tweak things here and there. You know, for example, it was very difficult to cut Chapter 70 education funds to cities and towns in a low budgetary period because it's set by formula. We would have to suspend the formula temporarily. But, you know, cities and towns hate it when we do this, but, you know, we have what we call free cash. We just hand you money. You do whatever you want with it. That stuff we end up cutting. Because, you know, the attitude is that since it's not dedicated funds, it's basically, you know, enjoy money. You know, we need more. We're going to cut back on things like that. And St. Towns get angry at us because who doesn't want free money?
Well, right. Yeah, exactly. So what's the holdup on the state budget?
It's a little unclear to me. I'm only speculating at this point because the conference committee has been very, very, very quiet. And as you saw by news service, whether we stay in news service or the local media, very little information is coming out. There is a dynamic that's affecting this differently, is that there's still a tax package out there for tax relief. The Senate and the House has massive divergence on how to keep it as revenue neutral as possible, as well as what to provide tax cuts on. So the Senate has a lot of tax credit related issues to a lot of industries that we didn't contemplate. Ours was very narrowly focused on agree or disagree, very narrowly focused on middle class issues. And you know, try to address things like cap gains, earned income tax credit, rental deduction, dependent child and elder dependent tax credit uniformity and simplification, state tax. You know, we actually had a very narrow set, and then the Senate just proposed a much more larger group that included, you know, everything like the dairy tax credit down to increase in excise tax on alcohol. And they actually raise taxes in a weird way while we do phased-in deductions, banking in our future revenues, we don't cover the shortfall that keeps us relatively revenue neutral. I'm thinking that maybe that's one of the issues that's hanging us up because they need a proper budget projection number. And the tax cuts actually reduce revenue or creates a new revenue number. The projections I need to work towards. So I think that maybe that's what's going on here. I know there's a few policy pieces in the back of the budget that the Senate put in particular. I'm not clear which one's the most important ones to them. I am aware of things like iLottery is a bit of a hang up. You know, you all heard, you know, things like in-state tuition for undocumented under certain conditions. Again, it's not you know, free lunch thing. There's a lot of stipulations of a city bed is sitting in the center version. Now, well, not let's not get into Paul's issue. How do we pay for that, right? That's the other question. And competing priorities. So, you know, not naming names, we don't talk to some folks. And they're like, oh, well, we can use our lottery to pay for the situation. I'm like, no, that money's dedicated to early child care, which is a priority for the Senate president. This isn't a game of tit for tat. You don't just swap stuff out like that easily. It's a negotiation of the totality of the package and what it means to the bottom line number if you try to push forward all those policies at the same time. I think, you know, it's funny because I talked to some new members and they have this perception that you can tit and tat your way through these negotiations, you know, until they get to the conference committee themselves. And I've done a few conference committee, both staffing and now as a chair. That isn't how this works.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not. It's not just a pool of money you get to reach into and grab and put it what you want.
That's correct. And that includes any kind of policy pieces. Like, you know, I give you this, I give you that. I mean, that's what they show you on TV and movies and Hollywood. It's a little more intricate than that because, you know, whether it be a large comprehensive bill or the state budget, you know, all moving parts to somehow touch each other. You pull this string, it affects another part of the bill or perhaps even outside the bill regarding the law.
All right. So we'll see what happens then. Can you extend the interim budget if needed?
I mean, I was around when Birmingham and Finneran extended that into October 1 year. Oh, wow. But then again, that was back in the dot-com boom, and the state was flush with capital gains tax, super duper flush. So I remember, I'm showing my age. I remember watching people saw pictures of this in the Globe, but I mean, you know, I saw Tom Finneran and Senate President Birmingham actually doing budget negotiation themselves outside of the Ways and Means Chair. I personally don't think that's healthy because, you know, you're a chair and do your job, but it was actually quite a unique time between the two individuals. And Tom Birmingham has now passed away at 70, actually, this past year.
Yes.
So, you know, how time moves and, you know, watch him in the balcony because, Tom Birmingham was basically a chain smoker. Mm. So he'd just be puffing away while they're negotiating with Speaker Finneran. Again, things from my younger days that I observed in person because, you know, looking out there, what are they doing out there kind of moment, right?
Right, right. Well, it raises questions of transparency also. So it's, you know, not healthy.
Well, the Globe had its telescopic lens. I'm sure they. I mean, I know it was like 20 years ago, but I'm sure they could figure it out.
Right. It does come out eventually.
As you all know, I do have a story or two to tell. If you want to listen to the story or two, I got to tell. Been around long enough to see all these things unfold. And, you know, institutional knowledge is healthy in my job because people tend to make the same mistakes over and over again. If someone doesn't tell you a story about how come someone you're doing what you're doing that someone else did and got in trouble for it and why.
That's right. Let's not make that same mistake again. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
There's a reason I have enormous caution regarding any kind of request, including constituent requests, because I've seen what happened to other people that have walked down that path in the past. Yeah. And I really don't want to find myself in some of those positions other people have found themselves in because it's something that's really no way out of it.
Right. Right. Hey, speaking of requests, I don't know if you saw the Quincy Sun this week. The mayor is thinking about having the city take over Wollaston Beach and Quincy Shore Drive, but I guess that would take an act, he said, of the state legislature. What do you think about that?
It's the third one to do it, right? Phelan said it, Sheet said it. Now we have, Mayor Koch. Election year, why not, right? And it's easy enough to just blame the delegation. So it's easy to make campaign commitments that you can just blame someone else for. I don't practice that, by the way. I just tell people constituent services, this is where you got to go because it's outside of my purview, whether it be a passport issue to Congressman Lynch or, you know, I had an issue regarding coming emails regarding their property taxes. They threw the assessments were incorrect. So I had to send them back to the mayor's office. I'm like, you need to talk to the mayor's folks and they'll put you in touch with the right folks to talk about, you know, what your problems are. Happy or unhappy. You know, same thing, housing authority issues. I reach out to the housing authority folks and say, look, I mean, I'll talk to them and, you know, help find someone to deal with your case. But I don't sit here and say, you know, state should take over, you know, Granite Links or, you know, we should take over all the beaches in Hell's Neck. I don't say things like that. I mean, it's, you know, it's an election year. I get it. I mean, it's election cycle. You pick an easy target. Quinshoe Drive is actually in pretty good shape. I mean, the paving is happening at Quinshoe Drive and the Ponson Bridge. People remember there was a lot of utility work. The rain doesn't help paving and painting. I mean, duh. I think everybody can figure it out on their own. The streetlights issues finally getting some resolution slowly. I got another one at Frenchbrook Parkway. I got to get a new light up. The ECR is taking over it. It's one of the last pieces of property the National Grid had not been able to surrender over to the state. So we're hoping that the ECR will be able to upgrade that section. I'm aware there's some crosswalk painting issues I've been working on. I did get some state troopers to do a little extra patrolling around the Marymount School area because of people concerned with traffic. I did see a DCR ranger at one point trying to help kids cross school in the afternoon up on, I think, on Somerset. I was trying to remember where I was, a summit. I was trying to, because I drove through the area one day and just, you know, I do kind of do a drive-by, and I did see a DCR, something I'll continue to talk to with the new DCR commissioner. He's the mayor, former mayor of Revere. So, and he's actually former state house staffer. He was working in Senate Ways and Means for two senators that I actually know. So, again, it's kind of like what goes around comes around in business I'm in, where you just don't know where that staff and the person may become me, you know, or the commissioner of DCR or mayor or whatever, right? And, got me working with him to talk more about, you know, what can we do about the beachfront areas. The grasses has actually been mowed. Trash is always something I get a lot of calls on, so I try to deal with that whenever possible. But it isn't like I'm not aware of it. And, you know, there's a lot of state bond monies that have gone into the beach as well as the Quinshoe Drive area. And I know I get a lot of grief about dredging. I've heard from the city, but, you know, we got, like, I think $1.2 million cash that hopefully sitting in the city's waterway trust fund for future dredging. I still have to come up with another $4 million or so bond dollars. That I need to talk to the governor about getting it released. And people forget the intersection of C Street and Quinshoe Drive. How quickly people forget. I'm the one that got them $1.2 million working with the DCR as well as the Secretary of Transportation and with the city to get that project started, which is where the city continued its continuation of the conversation of the safety issues on C Street and trying to hook state money into a city road, which I'm still working on a bond release as well. And I know that National Grid's working on Frenchman Parkway. They dug it up. It's an electrical transmission line from North Quincy all the way to Quincy Point. It's a liquid fill line. It's actually 1 year younger than me, which is kind of funny. And then you can't just, you know, rip up a line and then just, like, you can't turn off the power, rip the whole thing up and put it back in. It takes like a year to replace. So you have to keep the existing line in place, dig a new trench, put the new line in, don't turn off the power. Then you have to switch the lines over, rip it back up again, take out the old line, and then repave it proper. It's not like laying water or gas where you can put a divert in a short distance of, you know, a few hundred feet. We're talking like a 2 mile transmission cable. And it's a super duper inconvenience for everyone. Trust me, I've been driving down that area too. But you can't just do a diversion transmission line like you water or gas. So this is like a whole different thing. So, I mean, I would say, you know, one, stay on top of the National Grid to ensure the Frenchbrook Parkway is put to the best condition possible. So, yeah, guys, I am kind of on top of it. I'm not saying I'm going to get your stuff done like tomorrow morning. I am, but I am on top of the issues. And, I don't think anyone's heard me on this video ever tell anybody else about, you know, what I want and what on top of what, right?
That's true.
I do my constituent services, so we do the best we can. Not everyone's going to be happy with me, but we try our best. And also the bonds, right? The mayor wants to pick up a ton of bond debt from the state. I mean, I'm sure he wants it for free, debt-free, cash-free, and probably even ask for a grant out of us. What's interesting has not been suggested is doing a maintenance contract with the state. That's not unusual. I mean, the spenders have helped out state properties through a maintenance contract where we would pay a municipality on help on maintaining property.
Oh, okay. This is news. I haven't heard about this. So the city could actually act as a contractor for the state?
Yeah, it's not unusual. Oh. It happens in rural areas as well as urban areas.
Very interesting. Okay.
And sometimes even contract regarding police patrols, which is always a big fight in Southie, in the Seaport District, who has jurisdiction, right? They can always work out some kind of arrangement, between the city and the state. So it's not like it can't be done. But
interesting, yeah. I just read it this week, so I thought I would bring it up and ask you about it. I just thought of it.
It's an election cycle. I mean, I'm just going to call it what, you guys all know me at this point. I'm just going to call it what it is. I mean, it's an election cycle. And we talked about earlier, I mean, it's 1 week to nomination papers or less now to do it. Anything can happen. So, and like I said, I have hope for a new DCR commissioner. I always do. And like I said, it's nice to have one that's a mayor, a former mayor. And former
Stales, Brian Arrigo.
Yep. Yeah, former Stales person. And I'm not sure he remembers me too well from the Senate days, but we did overlap quite a few years in the Senate. So again, I mean, I've been around a while in the Hill. I mean, not like I have a friend everywhere, but like I worked with a lot of people in my life. I mean, 27 years worth of people moving in and out of the state government. I mean,
yeah, pinches are pretty good. You've met most people, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like I haven't, dealt with a lot of folks rotating all through government life. And, like Congressman Lynch's folks, I mean, Nick and Dan over here reminded me quite quickly. It's like, we all came together in the Senate. You were there when we were there. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's like a lifetime and change.
Well, you were 10 years old at the time, Jackie. So.
Hey, that's not uncommon. People get to forget I'm a little older than they realize. I always, not to pick on some other folks in politics, but people always think I'm a part of a generation is a little further than theirs. And I'm like, I'm really not that far from you, actually. just had a different life growing up, that's all.
Right.
It's a slightly different life, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, he's correct. I mean, it can't be done without legislative approval. Walsham Beach is largely my district, shared with Bruce on the upper side. And of course, you need to pass through the Senate. And you also need an agreement from the governor. And, it's likely Article 97, because anything that's deemed environmentally sensitive requires 2/3 vote of legislature.
Ah, okay.
So meanwhile, not to divest too much, but digress too much, they still have the granted links problem, right? They have to negotiate a contract. The city council still has to figure out what they're going to do with that. And they're going to have to come back up to us. And, legislative delegations are likely to interfere with a long-term lease agreement. Because I'm not part of the negotiating party. Right. Now, as I've said before in the past, I mean, it's not like anyone consults what I think in the city, like doesn't do it at all. So whether it be discussing, broadband, we've talked about that in the past. I am an energy telecom expert, people. I worked in AG's office and it's something I did for 12 years for Michael Morrissey, as well as, racial issues regarding, this diversion, equities, inclusion stuff, which I'm sure in 10 years we called something else. But I mean, I remember the old Human Rights Commission, right? Mm-hmm. I have no idea what's going on the city level there with the appointments. Like we used to actually have during the Sheets, actually Macaulay Sheets and failed administrations, staffer for the Human Rights Commission, equal opportunity officer. Before you had DEI folks, you had this thing called equal opportunity officers or administrators or directors, whatever the title, but it's equal opportunity and existed in private and public sectors. And government made policies to try to encourage minority businesses. For example, I had a friend acquaintance I knew that worked for Mass Pike to have a dedicated section towards women minority contracts and try to encourage people to, when the Pike existed as its own entity, and it was actually doing a lot of good work, started a lot of small businesses, through those contracts. So, I mean, the municipal government, just like the state government and federal government, can create a, women, small business women, people of color administration office, which encourage small business contracts in the city to encourage development of those businesses. I mean, they can do that on their own. They don't need us. I mean, we have our own program and so does the feds. So a lot of stuff that, people talk about isn't new. It's just that you may have not had as much interaction as I've had in the past with certain issues. And I'm not privy to everything going in the city. I got enough problems, right? I mean, because here I deal with a lot of things. So it's... it's just different, right? And but I mean, people often think that I have the special insight in City of Quincy. I'm like, I'm just like the rest of you. I mean, I just have a little more experience in politics and watching, four, such as three administrations of mayors, you know, have engaged in one of some kind of format, you know, several dozen city councilors and school committee people over my lifetime, you know, and, you know, also county officials and, you know, the congressional delegation and, of course, you know, a number of folks in Beacon Hill, whether it be staffers or electeds. So, you know, but that's just my thought on that.
That's all I was asking for. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
I'm going to give you a little bit of an update about some stuff that's going on. And, you know, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and beat up somebody over stuff. I mean, I just tell you how it is.
And that's what we expect here on Tacky Talk.
Give me a target. We can talk about that. I already spent enough time complaining about Governor Baker's constant viewing my things. But, you know, that's less of a beat someone up and just flat out saying, this is what's been going on in my life with Governor Baker. And I'm hoping a better life with Governor Healy in my profession.
Yeah, well, it feels to me like she's still kind of getting her feet wet. I don't know if this is what she thought it would be.
Nobody ever thinks of what it's going to be until you get there. Mm. I am kind of a victim of my own stupid, I think, is way to put it, because I've worked at a state house a long time before getting elected. I engaged a lot of representatives, including, you know, all past legislative delegations in Quincy. And, you know, I kind of walk in knowing what I was going to get into. Like I said, the only crinkle I never realized was the whole Asian component where, you know, all Asian Americans, no matter the ethnicity, was showing in my doorstep talking about the issues and why it's important. And I ended up visiting a lot of other places and, you know, unintentionally assuming somewhat of a leadership role. I won't say a full leadership role, but, you know, some format of, I don't even know what this format is, but some form of leadership role regarding Asian issues on a statewide matter, which actually took me pretty much by surprise. It was never intentional. But a lot of folks, even in my world, they get in, they think they're in Congress to start with, and they act like they're on C-SPAN. And after a little while, they realize they're not on C-SPAN. Other folks have ambitions. They come in already thinking about where they want to be next and try to steer their state house career towards that line for another office. Some folks I've met, you know, after a couple of terms over my lifetime there, discovered this isn't a lifestyle for them. They lost the July 4th, they lost Memorial Day weekend. They're not making kids soccer games. They, you know, some folks have to travel further, you know, travel 2 or 4 hours, depending how deep into the state you're in, you know, discover this is a tough lifestyle regarding the commute. You're driving 8 hours in a day, you know, and then also the financial component. I mean, today we do, in my opinion, I'm not complaining. I mean, I think I do okay. But, you know, some folks in higher income areas, you know, higher property taxes, higher rents, higher areas, you know, and they've got kids to put through school, you know, they reconsider. I mean, Senate President Travellini did it right. I mean, he did 3 years Senate President, realized he had 3 girls to put through college, decided to leave on a high note, and proceeded to find himself doing lobbying and able to put his children through school. And I love Trav. Trav is one of my favorite Senate presidents, and obviously my favorite leader, Speaker Mariano. That goes without saying, folks. You know, it's interesting as I, you know, talk to people, and, you know, people have real life issues. You got younger folks that are under 30. They got here young, they're trying to decide what they do want to do next. And you got other folks that are working towards a pension on the far end of the spectrum.
Right. Yep. Exactly. It's all a give and take.
It's very human, as I like to put it. They all have probably similar problems than you do at home, and similar problems you do regarding their professional life and trying to figure out how to make it all work.
Well, that's how the state constitution was formulated, right? You're supposed to be representatives of the people.
Yes, and the 2-year terms encourages that, because I was texting a friend today. I mean, always in constant campaign mode. And I do get people ask me that. It was tiresome to be in constant campaign mode. Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, I have to raise money every single year, not on election cycles. I have to make sure I make all my appearances every single year, right? Not just appearances in city, state house appearances too, regarding my day job, right? In terms of making the hearings, as you heard earlier, I had to present oral testimony, right? Also working behind the scenes with my colleagues, right? Those of you who see me out there, I do campaign on for other Democratic candidates. You know, Speaker's office asks you to do something like I did with the president of Korea, to be at the head table representing the Speaker's office and the House of Representatives on behalf of the House, you know, at the table of the President Korea's luncheon. Yeah, well, I got to figure out how to make it work within my time frame, right? And I have, as you all heard, and I have a thing in July 4th I like to do since I got elected because I think it's a good decompression for me after a day of running around or a weekend of running around, right?
You
So,
just want to eat as many popsicles as you can. That's all. That's all about
well, I have a corn. The corn allergy doesn't help with the corn syrup, but yeah, how much if I could suck that ice pops, it definitely would. But yeah, it's a very, it's just very human, right? I mean, I
Yeah.
kind of try to bring to this podcast kind of a human element to this gig, that it's not what you see on TV or movies or books. It's a little more pedestrian, so to put it.
Yeah. How do we get a hold of you, Tacky?
617-722-2370. 617-722-2370 is the office number. We are staffed, as you heard, we were open Monday. Tacky.chan at mahost.gov, tacky.chan at mahost.gov. I am receiving a whole lot of emails. I'm up to like 190 emails about banning cat decline. And just to let you know, I am going to release the bill favorable on cat decline. End the
Okay.
practice cat decline. I am going to release that bill from committee. So if anyone wants to send me an email from Quincy who was watching this, you don't have to. I am going to give it a fair report. I just need the time to get a schedule of my co-chair on getting this stuff done. Another part of my job, scheduling my co-chair. I have a partner in this game, right? In terms of being a chairman. At Tacky Chan is Twitter, State Representative Tacky Chan is the Facebook, and of course, MALegislature.gov is the state website. You can watch my public hearings there and see what crazy things come out of my mouth, as well as obviously tackychan.org, which is a more like a resource website, which we are revamping. I have interns. Woohoo! So they're helping us revamping. Young people know how to build websites better than I do. And obviously, QATV and Joe here, whether it be on the podcast on your favorite podcast app, or through YouTube, or watching us on Comcast Infinity government channel.
Awesome. All right, Jackie, appreciate it as always. And if I don't talk to you, have a great week.
You too. Enjoy the weekend. Everyone, please try to stay cool and hydrated. And also remember, don't leave your pets and children in cars this type of weather. Even if you crack the window, it's not going to help. It is quite brutal.
That's a great piece of advice for sure. All right, stay cool. We'll check in next week.
Bye.